The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ever since then, just going to games, that's kind of how I fell in love with football, just having it.
Were you there in 2005 when I came into town and whooped that ass?
I did. I also watched on television when Al Wallace hit you.
What an asshole. Jeez. Get him out of here. Oh, Josh Norris bringing up good times and bad times.
Josh.
What a low blow was. Yeah. Taking me to the spleen time there. He was watching that. What's up, man? Paul Burmeister's here. Chris Sims on button. We got Jonald McDonald working the camera over there. He's got my solo looking good. Cut to my solo. Let's see Jonald McDonald's work. How's he frame me up? Is he doing okay?
And
okay, Jonald McDonald. He's got it.
A shelf life here with us, too.
He's coming to an end. I know, my man. We brought him on last week, so the camera got to see him.
Right. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
You were here. Yeah. I can't remember what the hell day it is anymore.
We're all the same.
All right.
Yeah.
Here we go. It's week 14. We got our Monday recap. We're gonna deep dive Chiefs, Patriots. We're gonna deep dive 49ers, Saints, the two games of the day, without question. Both were extremely exciting. One was a defensive struggle, the other one was the opposite of a defensive struggle. And then we should hit every other game that happened yesterday, and maybe even a quick preview of Giants-Eagles tonight. Eli Manning getting the start there in Philadelphia. That'll be big time. What's up? You good? Everything good?
Yeah. Good to see you here in the building last night.
Yeah, you had to do some hits for Premier League?
Some rugby.
Rugby.
Updates.
Updates.
It was fun to do the early game highlights. So
a lot of
good games, yeah.
Yeah, good. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Chris sits in the big room and very studious. Not the class clown. You're there taking notes. He's got all kinds of things he's writing down and keeping track of.
I stress.
You're a man at work with all those games.
I do. I stress.
Yeah.
Well, I stress because I got to be talking about it at 7 a.m. in the morning, and I don't want to forget little things of context. That's what bothers me.
You didn't seem stressed.
All right, good.
The personality. You were just very serious
good.
And focused.
Yeah. I do. I try to write a few notes down, especially early on in games, because I hate to get to a point later in the game and be like, well, wait, how the hell did we get here? What was it? What were the plays? So I try to write the important – or late in the game, I can remember those plays.
Right.
Early on, I want to kind of keep a little bit of a diary as far as what the hell happened, maybe a big play that I think kind of flew under the radar or something like that. God bless you. You're so good-looking, Jonald McDonald.
So let's get right into it.
Let's do it. We got a lot of football to talk about.
No surprise what the lead story is. Niners-Saints. Seems like once a year now we get a game. I'm thinking back last year, Chiefs-Rams. We're just like, please don't end. Please keep going. Please keep scoring points.
Sure. I don't love those kind of games.
Really?
I don't.
Why?
Because, I don't know, I'm old school. I like a good old 28-24 game.
I hear you.
You know?
But if it was every week, it would get old.
It would get old.
It's not every week.
No, you're right. It's very rare that comes like that. And I think this one was more fun to me than Saints-Chiefs from last year. Chiefs-Rams, excuse me. I think, first off, that these two defenses are still top-notch. I think what we saw yesterday was a little bit more mastery and wizardry from the play callers to where I didn't go away going, oh, that's bad defense. I went, holy shit, what a fucking play that was. Like, are you kidding me designing that? I just came away saying that more times than not, to where Shanahan, Sean Payton were just on fire with some of the game plan designs they had.
With Shanahan,
yeah.
he's been good almost every single game in calling plays.
Right.
You've been way out in front of this one. The way it went down yesterday, the amount of creativity, the amount of different kind of run plays and pass plays and trickery. Do you think it was because of necessity? Because he knew, I got to empty it all out to have a chance of beating this guy in this building?
Yeah.
Or was it some showmanship in that, I'm up against another guy who might be the best play caller in the game, and I'm going to outdo him.
I think it's very fair to think it's both a little bit. Certainly, there's the competitive part of any play caller. I think Kyle has aspirations, and not that he's told me this, but I just know Kyle because I've known Kyle for a long time. He wants to be the best play caller in the game.
Yeah.
And you know Sean Payton probably already thinks he is, and he's the man that way. So I think there is something there, too. I also think Shanahan realized that going into that environment, playing in the Superdome, which is definitely one of the toughest places to play in all of football, and it's very hard to stop that Saints offense when they're in there and on their game, that he probably knew he needed a few more tricks than normal, a few more creative game plan, you know, up your butt type plays to screw them over. And, yeah, even for Kyle Shanahan, who you know I gush about on a weekly basis, I thought this game was above and beyond just aggressive and creative.
I normally think of creative with pass formations and the kind of plays, but the run game creativity was there as well yesterday. Which one do you think made a bigger difference in the win?
The run game creativity. I do, because I think a lot of the big pass plays we saw off of it were off of the run game creativity, play action pass, whatever it may be that way. He does such a great job of tying it all together. And, you know, hey, we saw, you know, fake run, toss to Deebo Samuel around the edge, you know, give the ball to the running back, fake the toss to Deebo Samuel. You know, another one where we're going to give the ball to Juszczyk and fake the toss, and then he's going to come out the back door and do an option pitch to Mostert down the sideline. You know, I mean, there's just so many plays.
Top two running backs in any game, but in that building against that defense,
right.
16 carries for 123 yards.
Yeah. That's big time.
Who else is going to go down there and do that?
Well,
who else has
that? Yeah, you're right. I don't know if anybody can go down there and do that. You know, what it will take, and this is where Shanahan's brilliant again, and where, you know, we've seen anybody that's had any success running on the Saints is you can't run at the Saints. If you think you're going to run up the middle on the New Orleans Saints and that group they got down there, you're crazy.
They did a little bit. They did just enough.
They did just enough. And if you think back about what they did too, though, early on it was all on the edge. It was edge. And then they kind of spread you out. And then he starts to hit you up the middle that way. That's kind of the brilliance of his game plan overall, at least against a team like this, I thought. You know, but, yes, I mean, he's going to run the ball between the tackles. It's just a matter of when, and does he feel comfortable he's getting the looks and things like that to when he turns the corner there. But, yeah, I think overall, I mean, if we were going to hit the 49ers O, Saints D, and just break into that more than anything, it is the unbelievable, and we'll get to Sean Payton in a second, the assault of schemes. Sean is an assault in a different way, okay? So Sean Payton's an assault of, I got a million different formations and personnel packages, and we're just going to 5 yards here, 6 yards here, Kamara on a swing one-on-one with your guys. Your guy going to make the tackle. I'm going to get a formation where Michael Thomas is open over the middle, and he's going to be one-on-one. And can you make the tackle to make it a 5 yard gain, or is he going to break the tackle and go for 20? Shanahan is an assault of schemes where it's just like, whoa, this guy's going that way. Whoa, that guy's going this way. Whoa, it's a play-action face. Oh, no, there's a guy behind me for a 20-yard. Every play is looking for 20 and 30-yard gains. That's the difference, I think, between Payton and Breeze and Garoppolo and Shanahan. They are looking for explosive chunk plays almost every time they drop back to pass. And the run game, the same thing. They're looking to gash you. It's never like, hey, we're going to run it up the middle here for 3 yards. It's like, oh, it's boring. You know, we'll do that later on in the game when we've gashed them around the edge a few times.
Right. And I think that the numbers of the top two receivers reflect that. If you look at what the Saints do, and we'll get into their offense more, it's much more conservative.
Right.
They often will get less than 10 yards on a completion, and that's good. That's exactly what they're looking for.
Right.
You look at the top two receivers for San Francisco, Sanders and I'm drawing
Deebo Samuel.
Yes.
All right.
Well over 12, 13 yards per catch.
Right, right.
So
that
maybe
speaks
it's
to
not
it, right?
Chunks every time, but there's a major difference in how they produce and how they're successful.
Without a doubt. The 49ers, when they drop back, especially off the play action game, they're really, the play is always designed to go 25, 30, 40 yards downfield. And then the fail-safe, oh, no, nothing's there, is going to get you 5 yards.
Right.
But, I think you said it. First off, these two are special. I mean, they're weapons. Deebo Samuel's a weapon. You know, you talked about his, you know, yards per catch, 5 for 76. Then he's got a few runs, 2 for 33 that
Sanders
way.
Sanders was 7 for 157. So I digress.
Yeah.
Those two combined – were close to 20 yards per catch.
Right. I mean, that's pretty unbelievable.
It's crazy.
Right. And you know, to where it's a little different. And, again, this is where, you know, Drew Brees and lack of arm strength comes into play a little bit in as far as the comparison to Garoppolo and Shanahan. You know, we'll just think about it this way. This is where Shanahan's great. It's 20-7. They're down. He runs a play where we showed this play a few weeks ago when they played the Cardinals, and he ran a big screen to Richie James where basically – instead of Richie James coming in motion, they fake the speed sweep to Kittle. He fakes the ball to the running back. They roll out to the right like they're doing a normal bootleg. But instead of Emmanuel Sanders, who usually runs a corner route on this type of play, he goes to the corner and then the post. Bam, they hit the 75-yard touchdown pass, and all of a sudden it's 20-14. Those, to me, were some of the biggest moments of the football game because you're going, uh-oh, are the 49ers going to be able to answer?
Right.
New Orleans has got them. They're in trouble.
Right.
And then New Orleans scored again to go up 27-14. You're going, can the 49ers just go down the field and answer again in this environment? I mean, we haven't seen Jimmy G have to do this yet. Can he do it? And they go, they mount a little drive, and then what happens? It's the pitch to Emmanuel Sanders,
right.
And he throws the ball for the touchdown.
Right.
And all of a sudden it's 27-20, and you go, okay, they've weathered the storm. And they weathered the storm because of Shanahan's game planning to kind of get them through a few dull moments or, you know, the momentum of the Superdome and the Saints is jumping on you. And he had the ability not only to dial up the play in the right situation, but just the vision during the week to have these type of plays to go, you know, when my team's struggling or we're in a tough moment, I'm going to have these in my pocket to go to it to kind of re-jumpstart us and get us back in the game.
It's the kind of game planning and the kind of variety with the creativity and formations and plays and playmakers that can put a defense on its heels.
Definitely.
I did think in comparing the two that the Saints were more aggressive.
Yeah.
They more often would have 5-6 guys in the line. You're like, I don't know who's coming.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
But it never really got the better of the Niners offense.
No.
As often as they tried.
No. A little bit of a lull there, maybe in the early fourth quarter where, you know, they were down, the Saints were down 42-33. And I think you're exactly right. The Saints kind of just said, okay, we've taken away nothing in this game so
right.
far. We're kind of trying to play both, and like we're just getting gashed. And I think to what you're saying, and I think you're spot on because I wrote this in the end of my notes, they basically just said, all right, we're going to start playing some bare front, and we're going to play aggressive on the back, man. And they beat us. They beat us with some man-to-man plays or whatever. They beat us. But we're not going to get, like, gashed by the run and the pass game at the same time and really stop nothing. So they made a few stops when they were down 42-33 to get back in the game.
Right.
And then, of course, go up 45-42. And I think it's to your point is they just became more aggressive. They said a little bit of, like, okay, fuck it. We're just going to make this a fight. We're going to come after you.
Yeah.
We're going to put 5 D linemen on the field across, you know. And to me, those are some of the cool chess matches too. You know, I mean, there's so many things to talk about in this game. It's really even hard to get to it.
You kind of brought us to a great jumping off point though. You talk about the game's now in the 40s.
Right.
We're talking about the fourth quarter.
Yep.
Let's get into the fourth down play. Perhaps, I mean, definitely the biggest play of the game.
Sure.
Maybe the signature play of the entire NFL season so far. Fourth down and two. The big conversion, I think, 39 yards from Garoppolo to Kittle.
Yep. I mean, like, in the old play, you know, that's an old West Coast play. But Kyle does it a little bit more in a creative way than we used to do it with John Gruden. It would have been, like, Y shift to bunch left. You know, 73 scat, Y option, you know, smoke on the backside. They basically ran, like, a slant flat concept. But
in layman's terms, they're on the right hash.
They're on the right hash.
They've got trips to the left, but it's not spread out trips. It's a tight trips.
Right. Tight trips. It's a true bunch to the left.
A bunch.
Yes.
Right to the left.
Yes.
And with George Kittle just a little bit inside, he was kind of like the inside in those three.
Exactly right. He's the inside of the three. He's off the line of scrimmage. I did a little diagram for social media last night right after the game because people always want to know about it. So there you got, you know, the bunch to the left that you talked about. Garoppolo's in the shotgun. Bourne, who's the guy, the point man of the bunch, right? I couldn't see on the TV version what he ran. He runs a straight go. On this little diagram, I had him running an in-cut. So it was a straight go, okay? So I was wrong there, but I knew I was somewhere in there. And then on the outside of the bunch is Emmanuel Sanders. He runs a shallow cross. If they got some crazy blitz, he could throw to him, right?
Right.
And go, here's a shallow cross, get the ball.
Yes.
Maybe you can get the first down on the fourth and two. But what they really did with two-man coverage is now two guys have kind of cleared out some space, right, for George Kittle, who's in the inside of that bunch package, to now he comes out with a little bit of an arc release, right, a wide release, and he's matched up on the rookie Gardner Johnson, 22, who's in a very tough spot.
Yes.
They ran this play earlier in the game, but they ran it out of a little different formation. But nonetheless, Kittle does a great job of arc releasing, pushing upfield. Gardner Johnson does a decent job.
Right.
But Kittle has a two-way option, and these are tough to stop. And the Saints, they do a ton of this too. I'm sure Gardner Johnson's had Alvin Kamara run this on him before, right?
Yeah.
But he knows, oh, no, I got to protect the inside a little bit here because I have nobody inside to help me. Mm-hmm. And if you hit that, you know, then you're going, whoa, he's running and, you know, it's a 50-yard gain. I know it ends up being a big gain either way, but he has to protect that to a degree, and he does. And Kittle gives him a little shimmy inside just to make him stop for a second and then breaks out, and Garoppolo throws a great ball, and he breaks up the sideline and breaks a tackle and gets face masked, and that was it. Game over.
While I was watching that play for maybe the 14th or 15th time this morning and watching you draw it up there, it's a little bit like deja vu. That this is the second time in the last month we've been talking about NFC game.
Yep.
Fourth down, critical moment late in the game, with someone lined up to the inside, outcut to the sideline. Remember Zeke Elliott against the Vikings?
Against the Vikings,
It didn't work. And two things come to mind, and tell me if you think that I'm thinking about this the right way.
Yeah.
Number one, the Niners are on the right hash.
Right.
So the outbreaking cut, you've got that extra 6 or 7 yards.
Got more room.
Huge difference.
No doubt.
Think about how close to the sideline he was when he caught that.
Right.
Remember, Zeke kind of ran out of room a little bit.
Yeah.
And number two, you're going with a guy running an outbreaking route who's a professional route runner.
No doubt about
that. That's what he does in
practice.
No doubt
about that.
That's what he's paid to do in a game.
Right.
And you mentioned the little shimmy, the little hesitation. He set him up perfectly in a way that you can't really expect a running back to do.
No, you're exactly right. There's a little nuances that a real route runner needs to know. It has the patience in a moment like that to go, I'm not going to rush it. Because most receivers, young running backs, you know, that way.
In that situation.
They rush it.
Yeah.
They go, I got to be really quick. And they break out and they like give the guy covering them telltale signs. Also thing, before the snap, they motioned George Kittle over there to make sure they were getting the coverage they wanted, right? So let's make sure it's two-man or man-to-man.
Let's have them tell us what they're playing. Yeah.
And then to have them on the inside of the bunch is another advantage that Kittle would have over Ezekiel Elliott or the Dallas Cowboys, because now the guy covering George Kittle, he's got two guys kind of in his way as the ball is snapped, because there's a guy crossing his face and Emmanuel Sanders and Bourne's going upfield. So there's more traffic to fight for. He's got more to think about and react to. And it was just an easier, well-designed play. It's just easier that way.
And knowing Kyle Shanahan, as well as you know him, during that timeout, do you think he had like this play circled and highlighted and starred? Fourth and short, critical down, this is my play?
Yes.
Or does he have a section of really good plays?
Yeah, I think he's got... I think he's probably got a section of about 10 plays, like gotta have it type plays. That's usually like, and that might be actually the gotta have it plays. And then I wouldn't be shocked within the gotta have it plays if somebody like Kyle, because I know Josh McDaniels had this and I know John Gruden had it, where in the gotta have it plays, he's almost got his own special plays for Kittle within that to go, because this is my go-to player, and I'm going to have 4 or 5 just for him in the got-to-have-it situation,
I think,
some other guys.
Yeah, I think they tried to get it to him on third down as well.
Yes, and then, you know what, let me just make sure. In the third down play, I'm right here anyways. He ran over the middle.
Yeah.
Exactly right. And, you know, that was a similar play, too. It's really kind of an option route. It really was. It was a similar option route. The Saints played it well, and they got a little pressure on Garoppolo, and he couldn't throw the ball accurately. But, you know, the game, so many different things to talk about. You know, I think just, again, with
I would love to get your specific thoughts on Garoppolo.
Yeah, okay, good.
The heading of people were willing to pat him on the back. Hey, your team's playing well, but it's because of your defense. I need to see, and I'm kind of paraphrasing what I hear from people.
Yeah, no, I think that's very real.
I need to see more from you.
Right.
I don't not trust you, but I don't totally trust you either.
Right.
So it was a giant moment for him, not only at the end of the game, but really the entire four quarters.
Agreed.
And you walked away thinking what?
I went away thinking the 49ers are the best team in football, and that they're going to win the Super Bowl. That's what I walked away. That's how I feel about them. I do. I mean, that was a big question for me. Was Jimmy Garoppolo, could he deliver in those moments when the team wasn't dominating, when the run game might not be dominating? You're right. The defense wasn't playing well. The run game was doing well, but they sputtered in the first half, and they were down 20-7.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, they're down 27-14. And, yeah, did his coach give him some help on some plays? Okay, sure. But I mean, I don't like it. I heard that a few times early this morning already.
Every quarterback who's been successful has had an awesome play.
We got to go back and take Super Bowls away from Tom Brady because they've run a ton of trick plays. And Joe Montana, right. It's just not fair.
Yeah.
His coach helped him. But I think the big thing is he delivered in big moments. He was totally not fazed by the magnitude of the moment. That's what I would be more happy about than anything if I was a 49ers coach or the fans. He never looked like, oh, no, deer in the headlights, like, oh, I'm panicked. Mm-hmm. It's the Saints and Drew Brees, and I'm on the road, and I can't win. Like, right. He never had that moment to me. Yeah. He was very calm throughout, and even in those last few moments, it just seemed like he was playing within himself, playing pitch and catch. He made through one interception, and I think the encouraging thing about that is he saw it right. The guy was open, Emmanuel Sanders. He just let him too much. Emmanuel Sanders sticks out his hand. The ball pops in the air. Mistakes happen.
Should have caught it.
Yeah, he'd like to throw a better ball, too.
Right.
Shit happens. It's the NFL. So, right. I mean, that's not going to be the last time that happens. So even the mistake, though, what I'm saying, was not egregious to where I go, oh, I'm concerned. Like, he threw that ball into triple coverage. How do you do that at this point of the season? So big-time moment for Jimmy Garoppolo. Deserves a lot of credit. And really, that was the final question I needed to be answered by the San Francisco 49ers. Yes.
This morning, I went through and watched one of the times and watched this game, just only watching Jimmy Garoppolo with the thought in mind of how much Kyle Shanahan has helped him.
Right.
And you've talked about Sean McVay and Jared Goff, that the system's a little better than the quarterback.
Yeah.
You haven't said that about the Niners, but I feel like you like Shanahan's game a little bit more than Garoppolo's game.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I watched just with that in mind one time this morning. Three observations.
Yeah.
See if you agree or not.
Yeah.
Number one, and I'm thinking about things that he does in addition or, I guess, to enhance what Kyle Shanahan does as a play caller. Number one, his accuracy on the in-breaking routes.
Right. Some of those
from
throws early on,
yards, not just yesterday, but the last two or three weeks has been
on point. Right. That's why we see Deebo Samuel and Emmanuel Sanders like running like a bat out of hell after they catch the ball because they don't have to break a stride.
Exactly.
Right.
I think that's been really good.
Yes.
Number two, he's made a couple of plays outside the scheme.
Yeah.
Rolling out to his left, throwing back across his body for the touchdown.
Come on.
A third and two late in the game running. So he's done a little bit more to add on recently.
100%.
There's an add-on category in addition to the gotta have it category on the play calling sheet. And this is much smaller. Maybe it's not that big of a deal, but with the number of things they do in the run game, with the quick pitches and the fakes, I think his ball handling is terrific.
Off the charts good. I agree. It is. His play action fakes are good. His ability, there's never a mistake on ball handling, whether it's a speed sweep, pulling for the, we're running the read option, bootleg, whatever it is. It all seems to go very smooth. I'm with you.
Yeah.
He's a very cool customer.
Yeah.
He really is. I had people before the game going, do you think Jimmy G will be flustered by this moment? I said, I mean this in all the respectful way possible. He's just the right type of meathead to be a quarterback and not even think about the magnitude of the moment.
Explain that a little bit. That resonates with me.
Yeah, right. He's not too much of an intricate deep. He's not. I don't think he's sitting there thinking like deep thoughts like, what's the square root of 742?
Right.
I've always wondered that. He's kind of just like, oh, he's open. I'll throw it. Your coach, you said throw it to him. Sure, I'll throw it to him. And I know he doesn't talk like that, but I'm giving meathead quarterback talk.
I'll take it. You familiar with the movie Airplane?
Yes, I do. Yes.
There was some scene in there where they were going to go get Ted Stryker.
Right.
I was talking about him because he's a guy who always felt a little too much on the inside. And I don't think Jimmy Garoppolo is a guy you'd say he's feeling too much on the inside.
He's just playing. I agree. He's just playing. He was around Tom Brady in New England. So I think he got to see how that operated and how cool Tom is in the clutch, right, and that. So that resonates. I'll tell you another context clue that gives me, like, he doesn't really give a damn or always know the gravity of the situation. The guy went on a date with a porn star.
Hey.
I mean, I don't know what else to say. He wasn't very self-aware there.
Check in the plus column or minus column?
It's a plus to me when you can play like you did yesterday and go out with the porn star. You're having a great year, okay?
How did you meet her?
I have no idea. But, that's not exactly what, an owner or a coach of a team want to see their leading, face of the franchise. Oh, he's out with a porn star tonight. Really? Really? So I think that even tells you a little bit of the guy where he's just like, he's a little oblivious to that stuff. He doesn't care.
Right.
Yeah, coach, just tell me the fucking play and I'll run it. And don't you worry. If he's open, I'll hit it.
Right.
And I'm all for that at quarterback. You don't need to be
delivery.
A rocket scientist. He's got a very compact delivery.
Yeah.
He can get it out quick. It was a great day by him, a great day by Kyle Shanahan and what he did. I will say this, just while we're on that side of the ball, I did not like the pass interference call by Gardner Johnson mm-hmm. on the third down that led to the score to make it 42-33. Hit a George Kittle over the middle. They're going to get a sack on Garoppolo. They call him for holding. I didn't love that. And then later on in the drive, he threw the ball to Juszczyk in the flat after he broke the pocket, and the Gardner Johnson got the late hit while he was on the ground. I didn't love either one of those penalties. You know, I mean, again, in those situations, I think you just got to let guys play a little bit. Mm-hmm. That bothered me about it. But either way, he was phenomenal. Shanahan was phenomenal.
How about some that. Saints offense?
Yeah, let's do it.
Saints offense?
Yep.
All right. So 46 points, they lose. And this image I have in my mind recently of the Niners' defense, I mean, think about what Aaron Rodgers looked like against them.
Right.
I mean, it was complete mismatch.
Complete mismatch.
No chance. Right. And even though the Seahawks beat them, it was so difficult for Russell Wilson. That was an MVP kind of performance just to find right. a way to score a little bit.
A little bit. And let's not even forget how they scored. I mean, they scored with short field short field
exactly.
because the defense set them up at the 10-yard line, the 15-yard line. The defense scored a touchdown.
Right.
So it was hard, tough sledding for Russell Wilson as well.
It has at times seemed almost impossible for a quarterback and an offense to look good for four quarters against this defense. So
totally.
The Saints go with 46 points. And when you think about what they want to do and their identity, it looked exactly like New Orleans, like the way they've always done it.
Right.
My point is the Niners didn't throw them off really at all for a large part of that game. Why?
They did not. Well, one of the first things I wrote in my notes early on was just it's an assault of personnel, formations, and scheme. Like it's
was
just
it new.
I mean, not new. You know, no, not new. Little creative ways to do a few different things here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I just think as a defensive player, you're okay. It's one back, two tight ends. Okay, it's one back, one tight end. Oh, it's two backs, one tight end. Oh, wait, now they're split out an empty formation. What? And, you know, all those things lead to a team that is aggressive to now thinking and playing on their heels just a little bit more, let alone, oh, now it's a motion. Oh, set hut. Drew Brees is looking over here. Oh, he did a great job looking me off because now Alvin Kamara is wide open over here. So they're surgical in their attack the way. That's where they're a little different than the 49ers. That's where I was getting to a little bit before. The 49ers are just dialing them up, and let's gash them. Jimmy, I told you all week I'm going to dial up this play, and we're going to get them in this defense, and you just throw it in there. And Sean Payton's a little bit like, okay, I'm going to dial it up and formation them. Drew, you look over here, and if you just throw an accurate pass over here, we'll manipulate the coverage. We'll get 6 yards guaranteed, and we'll just keep staying ahead of the chains. And they do that, and they do that, and they do that. And then teams get frustrated, and they start to play closer to the line of scrimmage, and then, bam, it's you know, Jared Cook on a seam route or something like that. That's where they're different that way. They're looking more to just surgically attack you with an occasional aggressive throw down the field. You know, aggressive throws with Drew Brees right now, they're not going to happen a whole lot. But we saw a few of them yesterday that made the difference in the game and kept them in the game and got them out to a big start early on.
Right. He was well over 70% and around 12 yards for completion, which for the Saints offense means they're clicking along very well. No other team has had this kind of consistent success against the Niners defense throughout the game. So you know that like the Seahawks play them in week 17. The teams they have coming up, they're going to watch.
Yes.
Okay, we don't have Drew Brees. We don't have Sean Payton. But we're going to learn from this. We're going to see what went well.
Right.
What can another team pluck and put into their game plan?
Well, I think the thing that they can then pluck more than anything is, you know, steal some of the plays, especially like the two touchdowns of Jared Cook and stuff like that, where when you know San Francisco's playing that Seattle scheme, you know, that's what they did. They stressed out the rules of the Seattle scheme on
and
those
the
plays.
Scheme is
a three deep match coverage.
Yep.
So it's like it's a three deep zone, but if there's somebody in your zone, you match up and play him man to man to a certain area, and then you let him go into the next guy's zone where he'll match up against him. And that's what they did really with both Jared Cook touchdowns to get off 14-0. You know, they one time stressed out the linebacker Fred Warner underneath. He was supposed to get back and cover Jared Cook as he crosses the field, but he saw Alvin Kamara and he saw Mike Thomas in a tight split. So they were both there in his vision. He's going, oh, fuck, it's Alvin Kamara, it's Mike Thomas, they're going to go to him. And his bright lights just went so much on Alvin Kamara, he forgot to look over to the other side and, oh, man, there's a guy coming into my area. I need to cover him. So you know, again, I'm not concerned with, I guess where I would go with this, I'm not concerned with either one of these defenses. I still think they're going to be top-notch because neither one of these defenses is going to have to play an offense like this again the rest of the year. These are special offenses. There's no weakness to either one of the offenses. I mean, the one weakness we talked about, the 49ers, can Garoppolo, you know, come through in the clutch? If there's a weakness to the Saints, it's, yeah, can Drew Brees stretch the defense out consistently? But, you know, with the Taysom Hill factor, when they bring him in, and then Drew just pushing the ball down the field here and there, they can kind of overcome that. Mm-hmm. But I just don't know. You know, you go through both of these offense, top five offensive line, check.
Yep.
Stable running backs, check. You know, great ways to move the chains, whether it's play action, drop back pass, check. They got that. And then, you know, quarterbacks who can wheel and deal and deliver and do the right thing. So, you know, again, I don't know if there's another offense in the NFC that can really replicate the attack that either one of these can do to each other's defense, I guess, is my biggest point.
One concern I do have, Kamara, 17 touches, 43 yards.
Yeah.
Aberration or reason to be like, you know what, this guy's not as effective –
Yeah.
You want them to be.
No, yeah, I think, you know, the 49ers with their athletic linebackers and things like that were very aware of him coming out of the backfield, did a good job for the most part of rallying, tackling him when they needed to. You know, the 49ers are, of course, tough to run the ball on. So that was just a struggle regardless. I mean, the rushing stats for the Saints are a little misleading. You know, it's 7 for 69. Murray had a few runs here and there. He had a big chunk of it right at the end of the half when the first half was about to be over. I'm not concerned. They're going to find ways to get him the ball. Now, I will say him fumbling the ball there in the third quarter, that was a big moment in the game. You know, the fake punt, that was a big moment in the game. You know, there were special teams as a part of, we're not going to talk about a lot, but, you know, that little fucker 11, what the hell's his name?
Assumption College.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's a weapon.
Yeah.
I mean, he set them up for two short fields. You know, they give him a speed sweep. He rips off a bunch of yards. What the hell's his name? Devontae Harris? Deontay Harris. Thank you, Demolitis. And, you know, that the special teams factor did play into the game, not only him setting them up, but then, of course, the fake punt, which I don't understand on 4th and 18. I don't get it. And I have questions about that play altogether.
Man. Ballsy.
Ballsy? Dumb? I don't know. What do you want to say? I don't know what that is. I almost want to go – I almost question whether Sean Payton knew the rule. Mm-hmm. I think he thought, like, hey, I think we'll just throw a go route on 4th and 18 and we'll get pass interference.
Right?
I'm just saying. I could be totally
wrong.
With
18 yards to get.
I could be totally wrong. But I just questioned it. It made me think. Whether he knew that rule or not.
It is a little-known rule. I mean, it's...
I know. I didn't know it either. I can't lie. I was sitting there.
Yeah.
Coach Dungy was the first one to spit it out. And I was like, oh, you know what? You're right. I remember hearing that a few years back. And it hadn't come up. And, you know, that was that. That was a big point in the game. Because, you know, I believe that was... At that point, it was... I just want to make sure I got this right. 35-33. And it gave the 49ers the short field to then go up 42-33. Mm-hmm. And put together that drive. And... you know, there's just something I look at. But either way, Breeze played awesome. Michael Thomas was awesome. You know, Breeze early in the game came out somewhat aggressive to those touchdown passes to Jared Cook. And then they got away from it. They never really threw a ball down the field again until the last drive of the game.
Did the Niners defense, after those four consecutive touchdown drives, make any kind of adjustment?
Played a little bit more man-to-man. I think that was probably the biggest thing I saw more than anything. And both defenses had a moment of kind of settling in, like, okay, I mean, there's only so many ways you could trick us with runs and formations and things like that to where, you know, hey, the guys up front started to disrupt a little bit, get pressure on the quarterback. Both teams started to blitz a little here and there just to, you know, move the quarterback, stress the pocket that way. But, you know, overall, it was a really well-played game. If they play again, I would be shocked if it was points like this.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. They play again in January for the NFC Championship. It's going to go back to being like a 24-21, 27-24 type of game, I think, yeah.
And we are back to even with our big stakes betting.
Damn
here, because I took the over.
You took the over.
Yeah,
damn, so I know.
Starting out with a level playing field.
Good job by you.
NFC playoff contenders. Let's take a peek if you're watching on YouTube with us. If not, we'll just say what we're looking at.
Yep.
First seed right now, the Niners at 11-2. How about the Packers up there to the second seed?
Crazy.
At the 10-3 record, the Saints dropped down to number 3. The Cowboys, 6-7, are down at 4. And Seattle has the 5th spot right now. Minnesota, the 6th spot at 9-4.
So, you know I like Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers. I'm the president of Aaron Rodgers fan club.
Second best team in the NFC?
Absolutely not.
Right?
Not even the 3rd. And, you know, they're the 4th. And maybe the 5th. I mean, really, if you made me pick between them and the Vikings right now, I'd go the Vikings are better than the Packers. Now, Aaron Rodgers is a definite gap closer there because of his magic he can pull off.
Right. And we are going to get to the Packers in
Good.
A moment.
All right.
But you saw the Rams there on the list.
Yeah.
Back from the dead at 8-5. A couple of straight wins after that debacle against the Ravens. Is everything fixed now in L.A.?
They certainly got it rolling. It's going on the – well, you know what you're leading to me is the best of Week 14 presented
yes.
by Verizon, okay? And now we do have the best of Week 14 presented by Verizon, the network more people rely on, and more means as in my whole family and my extended family. I know Big Phil's paying, like, for a whole bunch of people on Verizon, all right? But, you know, you'll see here the three-headed monster – the last 2 weeks has really taken control of what they want to do on the offensive side of the ball. Todd Gurley has gotten back to running the football. Tyler Higbee has been a great addition as far as since he's been healthy, helping out the offense. Robert Woods dealt with some personal issues, don't know exactly what they were, but you see he's really their go-to guy in that offense, and all three of them have been playing well. But to me, more than anything, the guy that I look at and go, what's gotten them started again is Sean McVay. I think McVay has just, again, found his groove, his formula. He stopped trying to figure out the perfect play every time. You know, oh, let's sit there to 15 seconds and I'll get us in the perfect play. You know, the last 2 weeks, the two things I've seen more is they've just getting up to the line of scrimmage. How many times did you see the ball snapped last night and Seattle wasn't even lined up? Seattle looking around.
Yeah.
And what's the call? And, you know, guys just about to get in. And they set hot. And they're just getting down to the three-point stands. And all of a sudden, it's a run for eight. Well, no
shit. Because as you pointed out last week,
right.
he normally will get up there.
And fake it a little bit.
It,
and then hear
so
the clay.
What did he do?
He did the opposite.
What did he do?
He self-scouted himself. Hey, yeah. Look at you. How well done you are.
Thank
how
you.
Dare you play on words on my own podcast? but, yeah, he did. You know, I think, you know, he dabbled a little of that last week, and that's the magic of McVay. You know, he just kind of used tempo and pressure and, you know, I'm going to stop trying to call the perfect play all the time and just get up there and run plays and know that we can execute them the right way no matter what the defensive look is and put a pressure on the defense that way. And then every now and then we'll fake it. Oh, and they're playing this defense and I'll get us in the perfect play and screw you over that way. So McVay's really hit his groove too. And the Rams are not dead. The Rams are talented on both sides of the ball, as we know.
Yep.
And I think instead of trying to go through the run game, it's boots, like I said, it's screens, and then it's run game third is kind of the way they're orchestrating their offense right now, and it's been effective. And, of course, their defense has really bounced back since that Ravens game as well.
Elsewhere in the NFC, headline Packers.
And then that I got to wrap that up because now that was the best of Week 14 presented by Verizon. The Rams putting on a whooping on the Seattle Seahawks, which I did not expect. I did not think that would happen.
No, I didn't either.
Yeah.
I'm free to move on, yes. Yes.
You're allowed to move on.
Elsewhere in the NFC, Packers 20, Redskins 15.
Yeah.
How about this for a headline? Packers ride Aaron, .. The other one.
Jones.
The other one.
It's refreshing. I mean, that's honestly, this is the way they're going to have to do it. They have to ride that Aaron first, Aaron Jones. Their pass game cannot just live on its own by itself. It's not like it's the greatest show on turf. You know, again, Matt LaFleur is very good, but their drop back pass game, I don't come away from games going, oh, my gosh, it's like Sean McDaniels. Sean Payton. That's not like Josh McDaniels.
Right.
They know how to pick you apart. They have all the basics in the pass game. The beauty of their pass game is when their run game works and their play action pass. And to me, that has to be set up with them being patient with the run game with Aaron Jones.
Vikings 20, Lions 7. A little damn okay for Danielle Hunter.
Yeah, well, I mean, what is it? Youngest guy ever to get the 50 sacks.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Kind of gets overshadowed in that defense. That game altogether was kind of just a ho-hum game. Like, not that I was glued into that because I expected Minnesota to kind of win the way they – I mean, Minnesota to win the way they did.
Both of those NFC North games that we're talking about,
yeah.
Kind of the same.
Kind of the same. I'm more concerned with the way the Packers play it and the fact that they let an inept Washington Redskins offensive team kind of hang around and never put them away, really. And the week before, it was 17-13 against the Giants in the fourth quarter too. So that's where I look at the Packers and go, yeah, they've won. I get it. They haven't had the toughest schedule in football this year. And, you know, I'm not sold on them by any stretch of the imagination. Minnesota, therefore, on their side, I'm definitely more sold on them. First off, their defense is better than Green Bay. And, you know, their run game is consistently good. where Green Bay's is like, oh, it's good for a week or two, and then we don't hear for it for 2 weeks, mm-hmm. and then it's good again, and then it's not good, and it's all over the place. You know, the Minnesota Vikings and Mike Zimmer, they're going to run the ball, and I don't think they have any problem playing these type of games. Like, they're welcoming, oh, 20-0, 20-7, fine. We're fine with that.
Right.
We don't want to. We don't care if we win 42-21 and throw up for 500 yards of offense. They're not into that. That's not what their head coach is about. And they won the game, and Kirk Cousins made a few big throws, and you know, their defense was suffocating.
And still one game behind the Packers. Looking forward to that game.
Yeah, that's a
coming
big game.
Up, it's huge. Hey, a little bit later in the season.
That yeah. The Packers got the Bears this week. I mean, they can lose to the Bears. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. Yep. I mean, you know, the NFC is not over yet. There's a lot of football to be played.
And before we get into our deep dive number two, which gets us to the AFC and the Chiefs 23, Patriots 16, let's check out some Twitter response from the best word to describe the Patriots right now. We got a lot of reactions here, and I know you tweeted this one out.
Yeah. Because, I mean...
Frauds.
Wow.
That's one. Too strong?
I think it's a little strong. Complacent?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Coming from a Jets fan there, I saw that.
Done. All caps.
Done. Okay. Not sure about that either. Gronkless. Yep. That is true.
Facts.
Yeah. Facts. And that is hurting them big time. Yes. Pressure. If Brady isn't absolutely harassed all night last night, they probably wouldn't. Well, yeah, if my aunt had balls, she'd be my uncle. So, you know, that's if. Inevitable. It's inevitable there'll be a drop-off. It's inevitable they will be in the final conversation. Yeah. Well, it is. It's inevitable there will be a drop-off, and there it is. We're on to Cincinnati. It's back to 2013
bad
all over
game
again.
Against Kansas City. We're on to Cincinnati.
Was that the 2013 or 14, that original quote?
14.
It's 14?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was in 2014.
This is a little more troubling than the 2014
What word would
Kansas
you use?
City Chiefs.
I'd say stuck. They feel stuck.
Yeah.
In the same spot the last five games for me.
Inept. Inadequate. You know, there's a lot
that's
there.
A step that below stuff.
Yeah, because I just – they have the type of problems that, again, I have the ultimate faith in New England. I do. And Brady and Belichick and McDaniels to continue to work hard and tinker with finding the right perfect formula. I mean, that's what they're the master's at.
That's the number one compliment.
Yeah.
That's also the number one problem. And guys like us who spend our living thinking about things like this,
right.
that we're a little reluctant based off the last 15 years to say – it's done.
Yeah, right.
This doesn't look good.
Uh-huh.
They might get a little bit better, but I don't see him fixing it. And we're all a little bit reluctant to take it there. We can point out that it's not doesn't look the way it's supposed to.
No doubt.
Doesn't look the way it used
to. They will make you chicken out.
But we give them the benefit of the doubt.
We do.
So many times offensively they figured it out. Where are you in that process?
To your point, so in Sunday Night Football last week when they were playing the Houston Texans, I was in that green room you were talking about. And all I did was talk up the Texans. Texans can win tonight. Hey, Chris, who are you picking to win the game tonight when the show came out? I'll take the Patriots.
Yeah.
Because you're scared. I was scared. You're like you said, it's 17 years of domination and always finding a way. But last week, I picked the Chiefs because I think I've seen enough to know, hey, they're still good and they're still going to be a pain in the ass. But this is not the same Patriots we've seen like the last 6-7 years. It's not. It's not the same team.
And it's getting to be a bigger sample size.
Yes.
It's ever since the calendar turned to November.
Right.
2-3 the last five games. Mm-hmm. And whether it's last night against Kansas City, Chris, or 2 weeks ago against Dallas, or a month ago in Philadelphia, you remove whoever they're playing, it's the same kind of frustration.
It is.
Offense can't move the ball.
Right.
Tom looks pissed
off. And Dallas and Philadelphia are not that good, as we know.
And the point is, no matter who they're playing, it's been the exact same feeling you get from watching the Pats.
Pretty much. You're right. I mean, we can go back to really the Browns game when they won 27-13, and I can go, no, there was inklings there that it was true issues. I mean, the Browns had some moments of totally shutting them out. I mean, they really did. Again, you know, it was three consecutive plays of turnovers. Then the week after that was the butt-whooping in Baltimore. Then it was the Eagles game, which they had to use a trick play to score the touchdown, right? You know, the Cowboys game, which was a lot of struggle. It was a block punt something else that happened in that game to set up a score. You know, and then, of course, the Texans and the Chiefs. So
I've gotten the feeling that you thought this whole time that the defense was good enough.
Yes.
And with the faith and, like I say, giving them the benefit of the doubt that you thought the offense
I thought they would come along. Right. I think the Texans game changed me. That game gave me the confidence at least to go, you know what, Kansas City's going to pose a lot of problems for the New England Patriots, too, and that's why I picked Kansas City.
What's the biggest problem that they posed? Well, to the offense.
Yeah, okay, so the greatest thing they pose, Steve Spagnuolo, first off, this is my headline, is he New England a little bit? He New England,
how so?
In New England, which I love, okay? And I mean that because, one, doing some abnormal disguises. Oh, we're going to blitz. Everybody's at the line of scrimmage. We're going to drop out. Oh, now this time we're blitzing. That's what New England does to everybody. They took away their best player. There was a number of third downs and red zone plays where they said, throw it to somebody else besides Julian Edelman. Right. We're doubling him.
And who's that somebody
and
else?
And who was that somebody else? Exactly. Steve Spagnuolo deserves a ton of credit. He really took a lot of things that New England does to teams and put them a part of his game plan. Other big third downs and red zone plays. He goes, okay, it's Julian Edelman. We know that. All right, I got him doubled. Who are they going to go to next? Oh, down here in the red zone, there's that fucker 28, James White. Yeah. So they doubled his ass too. And they said, fine. Let's see if N'Keal Harry or the tight end can get open man-to-man and Brady will trust them and throw them the ball. Well, you know, yeah, they got screwed over by the N'Keal Harry. He should have scored the touchdown. They called him out of bounds. That stunk.
Right, right.
And that's a shit call for the Patriots and the Patriots fans, definitely. I mean, they got unlucky there. But, you know, that's what I took away from it more than anything. Spagnuolo, game plan-wise, took away their strengths. He was not going to be beat by Edelman and James White in certain situations.
Is there a strength after those two?
No.
Honestly,
no, there's not. There's not. There's not a strength after those two right now that he can go to. And the majority of their plays are planned out to go to one of those two in big moments. So that was great in that aspect. You know, the other thing they did is, like I said, you know, disguise. We're going to blitz. We're going to play this coverage. Set hut. Oh, it's a different – it's not a blitz. It's a different coverage. They did all of that. To start the game, they started – the game doing what New England did to the Chiefs last year in the AFC Championship game.
Which is?
Where they played man-to-man with a single safety deep, and they basically said, hey, single safety deep, you double Julian Edelman, and we're not even going to have a safety back there because we don't think they're going to throw it too deep to anybody, and we like our matchups. Mm-hmm. So we feel good with,
why
you
wouldn't
know,
they like the matchups?
Exactly right. Yeah. There's nobody that scares you after you get through Edelman and James White and some of them. So they basically played a few plays where last year in the AFC Championship game, the Patriots played man-to-man on the Kansas City Chiefs and doubled Tyreek Hill with the single safety to where it became basically cover zero, no safety in the middle of the field. And it took forever for Kansas City to figure it out. It
right.
took them in the third quarter. Well, they came out in the game the first two drives and did that defense to New England a few times, which I love. Copycat right. league, like, hey, up yours. We watched what you did to us last year. We're going to do it back to you.
We stole it from you.
Yeah, we stole it from you. And you know what? You don't have a plan for it? How dare you?
So Steve Spagnuolo had a good game plan.
Yes.
In the back end, the Chiefs, no surprise, liked their matchups and won the matchups.
And they got
DBs against pass catchers.
Yes, they do. Right.
So next biggest problem that you saw yesterday.
Yeah.
This can also go to the bigger problem New England's been having, like we talked about since November started.
Right.
Is it Tom Brady?
Yeah.
Or is it the offensive line?
It's the offensive line more than Brady. Definitely. You know, it is. The offensive line, they're the fight's being taken to them every week, and they're getting their butts whooped. Like Chris Jones and Okafor and Nandi yesterday, number 91 for the Chiefs, they pushed the shit out of, you know, whether it was Wynn the left tackle, Cannon the right tackle, Shaq Mason, where I don't know what the hell has happened to him this year. He's been one of the better guards in football the last few years. You know, this year, I don't know if he could block you and me man-to-man. I don't know. It's just that's
– Wow.
So they're a disaster there. And then it's filtering over to a quarterback who's 42 years old and does not want to be hit the same way he did when he was 35
right.
years old.
Which brings me to one of the key plays.
Yeah.
And I'm counting on you knowing this game pretty well.
Yeah, I got
like
it.
Like I know you do.
Got it, yep.
Okay, fourth down and seven,
yeah.
27. It's late in the game in the second half.
Yeah.
Kansas City's winning. Slot safety,
yeah,
who's over Edelman, blitzes.
To the right side of Brady.
To Brady's right.
Gotcha.
Comes in a blitz and
know
comes untouched.
Know the play you're talking about, yeah.
But because he came,
yes.
Edelman had a lot of cushion.
A lot of cushion.
Ran an out route.
Right.
I'm going to say he was 2 or 3 yards open.
Yeah.
But Brady had to stand in against that free blitzer
right.
and make a good throw, and
right.
he didn't do it.
Didn't do it.
Now, it's a really high standard because he had a guy in his face.
Yeah.
He had a full head of steam coming at him.
Right.
But he just flat out missed the throw.
Yes.
Is that win, Spagnuolo, great defense, way to go, or Tom Brady, you missed that one, and it's an example of him not wanting to get hit and not as good as he used to be?
I look at it as win Spagnuolo and Tom Brady together. Win Spagnuolo for realizing you got a 42-year-old quarterback who doesn't want to really be hit. If there's a weakness to him right now, it's that.
And his follow-through, if you really know his follow-through.
I know.
Showed that. Showed exactly what you're saying.
Without a doubt. He was more worried about Tom Brady, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, stands there and goes, fuck it, I'm going to throw a bullseye and you can just crush me and I'll deal with it.
Yeah.
Tom Brady right now is going, ooh, I don't want to take this hit. Let me try to throw a bullseye.
Right.
There's a difference in the way he's approaching that right now. And that definitely jumped out to me. And there's no doubt that's exactly what I mean. I don't know if I wrote that in my notes or not, but that is definitely one that jumped out to
play.
Me. Yes.
You tipped me off to it a little bit from our conversations here this year, really backing up into the offseason. We were training these quarterbacks.
There was inklings of it last year.
About a month ago when they played at Philadelphia, when Tony Romo was going over the keys of this game, he said more than one time, and he came back to it, Tom Brady, if they're going to win, he's got to stand in the pocket and take hits today.
Yes, right.
And I kind of sat up and like,
Nobody wants to say it, Paul, because it's Tom Brady and it's the Patriots. And they're, I'm probably going to have to interview him later this year when we have him in the playoffs. I want him to accept the interview.
Right.
So I'm just telling you, I'm the guy that's here to say it for everybody.
Well, that's two guys
I don't know if my dad's going to say it.
Nationally.
Yeah, right. And Tony will say it.
That's what I'm saying,
and he said it in a real correct way.
And
nice
he didn't
way.
Say it and hide behind it. He said it a couple times.
Good,
and he came back to it later in the game, too.
Right, yeah. I think it's a real thing. And, again, it's not easy to play quarterback when you're under duress like Tom Brady is.
Right.
But I've seen Tom Brady under duress before not flinch in some of the moments he's flinching right now. And to me, I just saw inklings of it towards the end of last year. Have seen it again this year. Doesn't mean he's still not really good. Doesn't mean you still can't win the Super Bowl with him. He can make big-time throws, but –
right.
With an offense that's struggling and you're not one of the, you're not high octane right now as far as that, those little plays start to magnify now because, last year he would get away with it maybe on a 3rd and 7 and then, fourth and seven, we dialed up another great play. There's Gronk down the middle. Bam. I mean, just throw it to Gronk. He's covered, not covered. Doesn't matter. I'm just going to throw it to him. First down. And then we'd all forget that he was kind of flinchy on 3rd down.
Right.
But they got the 1st down. So who cares? Oh, it's all good. He's Tom Brady. Blah, blah, blah. And we just moved on.
Right.
And that's all that I was trying to say in the offseason, that I saw some of that was a little concerning.
Yeah.
And now that there are even less around him right now, it's being magnified in certain moments. Hey, listen, the last play of the game.
Yeah.
He fell down. Nobody touched him.
Right.
He threw the corner out to Julian Edelman.
Right.
He fell down.
What'd you think of that play?
Well, gutsy call by Spagnuolo, all out blitzing there.
They brought eight?
Brought eight. They said they were going to bring it to Brady. They were going to bring it. They were going to make him make the throw. And, Bashaud Breeland got a little touchy with Edelman as he came out of the break. But all together, that was a pretty damn good play.
Yeah, it was a nice play. I mean,
it was a nice play.
I didn't think it was interference.
No, I did not either. Not. I would never like to see interference called in those scenarios.
Right.
We get to the end of the game, unless it's blatant, I don't want anything called. You know, that's why I had a problem with the George Kittle play against the Gardner Johnson in New Orleans. He came off the blind. He punched Gardner Johnson. He pushed him. And then Gardner Johnson, as he's getting pushed back, holds his shoulder because he's getting bowled over.
Mm-hmm.
And they call pass interference on him. And I just think that's not the right call there in that moment.
Right. But, and this is like I hate all the referee talk and the pass interference talk because the main story there about that sequence, the Patriots had 1st and goal from the 5 and didn't score.
Right. Yeah, right. And how often do we ever see that?
Right?
Right. It's
and
very rare.
The opposing defensive coordinator coming back and kind of wrapping it all together, which you talked about with Steve Spagnuolo, was willing to say, I'm going to play one-on-one with these three receivers, and I'm going to win.
Yeah. And I'm not going to let Brady sit back there and pat and go through and make the right decision and then throw some laser in there.
Right.
I'm going to make him a decision right now and make him make it where he knows he might get hit. And is he willing to do that at 42? I think that's what he did. I think that's what we're starting to see a little bit more the last 2 weeks, where two defensive coordinators in certain situations just said, you know what, we're going to bring it to Brady here and make some of these other guys beat us other than Julian Edelman and see if they can do it.
And we're not even going to have a free safety in the middle to help.
No.
That's how much we believe in the matchups that are on our side.
There you go. Yeah. There you go.
Other side, Chiefs offense, Patriots defense.
Wait, one more thing I wanted to make a point of, just with the Patriots offense.
Yeah.
You know, the Patriots, we talked about the Chiefs' really good game plan. But to me, the yesterday showed a little bit that the Patriots have a little disbelief in their offense, too. I mean, the two trick plays, they always have trick plays. But to me,
the Niners had trick plays.
I know, but the Patriots are seeming to dial them up on every week basis right now to tell you that, like, oh, man, our offense just, we're not clicking. We need something on every drive almost.
And they were the two biggest plays.
They were their two biggest plays. Yeah. That's what I mean. And then the other thing that I just thought was a little telling, Sammy Watkins catches that ball for a 1st down, and Belichick challenged it, which then not allowed him to challenge the N'Keal Harry stepping out of bounds. Like, to me, see, Belichick is – moments are being magnified right now, and every inch is mattering a little bit because he's going, oh, man, we need to get off the field here, and I don't know if my offense can score points and do things like that, where he's worried about them. So he's – almost overmanaging a few situations. They're just little clues. That's all I'm saying. All right, that's it. I'm done. You know who else is awesome? Honey Badger, Chris Jones. Got to give them credit. They were beasts yesterday.
Right?
Yeah.
Our Chiefs offense, Patriots defense.
Yep.
Not going to spend as much time.
Yeah,
as we
I got
the other
you.
Part
I won't
matchup,
beat you. I know that was
what's
long.
Worth hitting. What's worth hitting there?
My number one theme would be, I think it was one of the worst games I've ever seen Patrick Mahomes play.
Really?
Yeah. He was tentative, inaccurate a lot of times.
What's at the top about the tentative?
Yeah, tentative. I think he, you know, you want to talk about seeing ghosts? Man, did he leave the pocket a bunch when I went, there's nobody near you?
He always does that, though.
He's been a little bit of bad habit lately, especially.
Like backpedaling
and throwing off his back foot, no doubt. There's no doubt.
That's not new.
It's not new. I think it's becoming more consistent, though, to where, yes, he always did it, but he did it within the right rhyme and reason to where I went, oh, yeah, there's a little pressure. You're supposed to back up here.
Now he's doing it
like nobody around him.
I think I wrote one of my little scribbled sentences here that kind of speaks to that while watching him. It's like, does Patrick Mahomes ever take three and release just from the pocket?
No, right now he does not. He does not. Exactly right. That's what I want to mean. And there was a number of plays and throws during the game where I want to go, just stand there. There's a guy coming across your face right now. If you just stand there, you're going to hit him and he's going to be running and you're going to get a first down. But, you know, I think with his history against the Patriots, intercepting him early on, he became really careful. And then the beauty of the Patriots, again, is just getting back to what they do at the line of scrimmage. As a quarterback, you never feel good. You know, oh, it's four coming, but wait, did we pick up the right four? And you're looking around, and that can lead to you not seeing the rest of the field clearly, too. And I think that was certainly another issue there. This game was crazy from the sense of this. At one point, I'm sitting there going, the Chiefs are about to blow them out of the stadium.
Felt like it, didn't it?
I mean, it's 23-3, and they got the ball at the 45-yard line. And I'm going, holy shit.
Was it 23-7.
I'm going, holy shit, they're about to blow the Patriots out. If they can just put a drive together. Oh, they go three and out, the punt gets blocked.
Yeah, right.
What? Now it's 23-10 after that? Or they went to 23-13. You're right.
On the run, yeah.
Then the next drive. Okay, here they go. They're moving the ball. Yeah. Travis Kelce runs backwards on a 3rd-and-2 and then fumbles the ball. And then all of a sudden you go, shit, that's 23-16. Here we go. We're in a game. And then the referees screw the Patriots over to where you go, maybe they should be winning now.
You know what's fitting here? In the Patriots closing that gap, you talked about the special teams.
Yes.
The defense, the referees.
It's crazy.
Not once the offense.
I know. It's a different year. It is a different year. So either way, and you've heard me say this, I still think the Chiefs are tinkering with their new plan of attack, and I do like it. I think it's going to make them better in playoff football.
What's new?
Underneath the center more, some little more play action, a little more diversified drop back pass game. They have more ways to attack you in the shorter part of the field when they drop back to pass. Not everything's just vertical. You go this way, cross, you go deep post, cross, all that. They've stopped doing that a little to me, which is going to make them more effective against the good teams in the playoffs, definitely. I do think they'll find their stride. What's scary about them is, you know, they don't even need to be playing good football, and they're still dangerous because of 15-10.
Because of what he can do.
Yes, right.
There was a 3rd-and-19.
Yes,
a
3rd-and-20. Let's go through that.
He threw
maybe the biggest
25-yard in route.
Yes.
And, I mean, it's amazing that he has the ability to do that. But, I mean, I watched that over and over, and I'm like, I think a 25-yard in route is open because nobody else does it.
Yeah, you're right. There's not a lot of teams that do it that just go, oh, you know, a lot of teams would have just gone, all right, let's throw a check down and get 10 yards and punt the ball and try to pin them back.
Yeah.
No, that's not the way.
And he was falling away when he threw it.
Falling away and threw it and threw a strike. I get it. Yes. And that was unbelievable. That was a huge moment in the game. And I want to get to this because it's 3rd-and-19. You're exactly right. They play a 2-deep zone, the New England Patriots. He kind of floats to his left, bam, throws it in there, in cut, first down. You're going, whoa, okay. Then the crazy thing is, 2 plays later, it's 2nd-and-25.
Yep.
And what do? They don't go, oh, let's get half of it back. They go, let's get the whole fucking thing now.
Yeah.
And they catch the Patriots in man-to-man. Mecole Hardman basically runs like he's in the slot. And, you know, they almost try to make it. It's he's running like a post, and there's a guy going to run an in cut outside of him. But as he starts to get to the post, he bows back out to the corner, and Mahomes throws the ball out there nice and soft and just lets him catch it. And then Mecole Hardman, you know, like Tyreek Hill, his start stop start ability is like unmatched.
Right.
So guys are sitting there like, oh, which way is he going to break? Oh gosh, he's already ran away from me. It's over.
Yeah.
And touchdown. And all of a sudden, that was a game changing moment.
Yeah.
Your third and 19 that you brought up. Definitely.
Right. The third and 19. The second 25, and
yeah.
then we're getting back to the Patriots offense, but then Brady threw the pick on the next
Brady
play.
Brady throws the pick the next play, yeah. where he forces the seam route to the tight
well,
end.
Somehow the corner ended up, I mean, I want to say he accidentally ended up
well, they're playing
underneath
they're
the seam
playing
route.
They're playing a three-deep zone, so his job is to steal the seam. Brady should have thrown the slant route to Edelman. He's open. Brady kind of preconceived the play, I think.
In any 3-deep, though? I mean,
There's two different ways to play 3-deep. Some teams play steal the seam. Some play stay outside and stop it. Teams that play steal the seam, they usually have a guy that drops underneath to steal the out route.
How common is that now?
Like a decent amount. There's a good amount of teams that do it. I mean, that's like how Pittsburgh plays cover three or whatever. But, yeah, so if I'm the cover three corner, I'm going to stand up for a second, all right? And you're the slot receiver, right? So I'm like, I'm the cover three corner. And let's just say this is Julian Edelman in front of me. I come off. If Julian Edelman stops, I still have to watch number two, because if number two goes vertical, it's my job to then try to cover him, because a buzzing linebacker or a safety is going to go underneath to cover the window of a Julian Edelman.
Yeah.
That's how they play their cover
three.
I think
Edelman ran like a 3-yard under
slant route. Right, and he was wide open.
Yeah.
But I think Brady saw Breland impress at the snap. He was close to the line of scrimmage, and he thought, ooh, I think this guy will just sneak by him. But Breland had said, Hutt, he backed off because he's playing zone, and he kind of just watched the play develop. And then Brady kind of threw like a lob changeup.
Yeah.
He didn't throw a clean ball, and it was an easy interception for Breland.
Yeah, it looked like he had no idea that the corner was going to –
Yeah, come off that way. No, I think he might have been fooled that he thought it was man-to-man or whatever. Yes.
All right.
I think we hit it all there, though.
AFC playoff picture.
Let's do it.
Put a stamp on it with that. Let's take a peek at what's happening in the AFC. Baltimore now number one at 11-2. The Patriots one behind at 10-3. Those are your top two seeds.
Yeah.
The Chiefs, 3 seed. Texans, kind of game yesterday.
Yeah.
8-5. They're the 4th seed. Buffalo has the 5th spot, and Pittsburgh the final wild card position with Tennessee, Cleveland, Oakland, and Indy kind of lurking behind. Tennessee in the best position there.
Yes.
At 8-5.
And they play the Houston Texans twice, the Tennessee Titans,
right,
down
the
stretch.
Last 3 weeks, yeah.
Right. So that will settle itself. And then also this week on Sunday Night Football, we got the 5-6 matchup.
Yep.
The Buffalo Bills versus the Pittsburgh Steelers. So that's going to clear some things out there as well. You know, I think in my heart of hearts, I still think the Patriots are going to be the number 2 seed.
Yeah.
You know, they're really the only game they have left is Buffalo. And Buffalo might be able to beat them.
Right.
I don't doubt that. Every game's going to be close to the Patriots. Their offense isn't good enough to blow anybody out at this point.
Yeah.
They're not. You know, maybe they blow out the Dolphins late in the year, but
don't you think that they're going to get that week off, win that home playoff game, and then have to go to Baltimore and find a way to win?
I would not be shocked. I would not be shocked. Now listen, if a team like the Houston Texans or the Kansas City Chiefs roll into town in that divisional playoff game,
right,
though, that is going to make New England nervous.
This is me falling victim of what I pointed out to you about just giving them the
benefit
of the doubt.
Well, I get it.
I don't want to be the first one.
I get it.
To say no.
I know.
They're going to lose that home playoff
game. There's some teams that pose some problems for them this year. There's no doubt about that.
A lot of them.
Yeah.
All right, Baltimore. We saw they were the number 1 seed.
Yep.
Ravens defense looks playoff ready.
24-17.
They find a way to win against Buffalo.
Yeah. I mean, just big, bad mofos. That's what they are. And they got great cover guys, and I promise you Josh Allen was the sorest man in the NFL this morning. Mm. It was just an assault on him the whole game. And, yes, they won the game by basically, you know, putting a stalemate on the Buffalo Bills offense in the first half, really going into the third quarter. You know, they got a strip sack fumble that gave the offense a short field, I think, to put them up 10-0 early on.
Yep.
And, it's just too much to overcome against that Baltimore defense has got size, a great secondary, and one of the best D coordinators in the game. As I talk about, like, a guy like Sean Payton or McDaniels or Shanahan on offense, man, Wink Martindale is that guy on defense.
Yeah.
He is special. You know, they do stuff every week where I go, oh, that's a really cool coverage, or ooh, that's
what was
a creative
the coolest
blitz.
Thing you did yesterday?
Yeah, you know, I didn't watch that film yet either, so I couldn't tell you exactly. But, you know, they do a lot of what they just do game plan specific stuff, where they're going to double a certain guy in a situation, or they're going to find a way to expose your protection. That was the thing I think that jumped out for me. There was a few times during the game where they realized, like, oh, they're going to slide this way. We'll show the blitz over here, and mm-hmm. we'll drop out and bring the blitz over here, and now they're sliding to a bunch of no ones, and we got them outnumbered
which
on the
is,
other side.
Which is something that you've talked about all season. Finding a way to confuse the quarterback.
Exactly.
That little bit of hesitation
bit.
With the offensive line.
Exactly.
The QB as
exactly
well.
Exactly right.
Broncos 38, Texans 24. Woo. How's this for a headline? Lock and roll.
Lock and roll, baby.
It's Pete D.
Yeah, that's all right. I mean, he's a cornball. That's all right, Pete.
Drew Lock over 300 yards.
Yeah.
Highly efficient, 2-0 as a starter.
Baller.
What do you think about how the team's responding to him?
I think that's something that's jumped out to me a lot is, you know, just listen to the post-game press conference. The way the guys interact with him after touchdowns, mm-hmm. you know, he's
– It's a cool scene.
It's a cool scene. And yeah. I think he's got – you know, I got to talk to him and on the podcast when he was coming out in the draft. He's got a great way about him. He doesn't take himself too seriously, yet, you know, he comes off that he loves football and he wants to be great. And he was willing to open up and, you know, be funny and whatever else. I think he's refreshing. And I think what it's showing to me is he's refreshing to the team. You know, this kind of happened to me a little bit with, like, and not to say you have to be this way. So I'm not knocking quarterbacks who are a little bit more straight arrow. But, like, I took over for a guy like Brad Johnson, mm-hmm. who was, like, he was just always business. It's business. It's business. It's business. Right? And, you know, so I got to take over my second year and become the starting quarterback. And that was the one thing, like, the coaches kept, hey, we love your energy in the huddle. We love what, you know, in the locker room. Guys are coming up to us and saying, and I don't know. I'm just being me.
Right.
But you know me. I'm getting in the huddle like, hey, motherfuckers, let's go, you stupid fucking motherfucker. You know, and I'm joking around like that to where, you know, it can just be a good change up that way every now and then.
Right.
And, you know, then I'm asking some razzing and talking some crap in the locker room. And, you know, just little things like that during a long season can give the team a little energy at different moments. And that's what I see from Drew Lock, let alone the talent he has. I mean, he's got a special arm. That's why he was my second-rated quarterback in the draft. I mean, not only a good athlete, but a special arm. And between him, Noah Fant, mm-hmm. and Courtland Sutton, man, do they have a three to ride it. And Phillip Lindsay at running back, that's right. A four. That's a quartet to say, hey, Broncos fans, you got an offense, something to be excited
it's
about here.
It's been a nightmare season for them.
Right.
If you have that kind of young talent and a young quarterback with that kind of talent, with a strong December?
Definitely. Yes.
We don't remember what September
can catapult you into the offseason.
Like,
you're exactly right. They have a lot of things to build on.
Right.
Because their defense is a top five defense in football. And then when you have some young talent on offense, you can say, watch out.
Before we move on, Texans, they've been so good recently. Looked really poor yesterday.
Yeah.
How much concern? Are you going to give them a pass? Or are you like, boy?
I just don't know what to think of the Texans. You know, the Texans, that's where it's just – first off, you know who didn't play yesterday? Will Fuller.
Yeah.
Right? They're a different team without Will Fuller. They need him because they're not creative enough on offense. They play matchup football. So they need that extra matchup to be like, oh, you want to play us man-to-man here? I don't think you're going to cover all three of these studs, right? So they need that. And then, you know, again, some guys in the secondary didn't play yesterday, so they're banged up there, and they got torched that way. That's been the concern with me all year is just their secondary more than anything. If they can have a healthy secondary and a healthy Will Fuller, they're a different football team. But, you know, the score of that game's a little misleading. It is a little misleading, and I don't want to take anything away from the Broncos, but I just want to make sure I get this right. You know, it's 7-0, great drive by the Broncos. Then the Texans are driving, and it's a 70-yard fumble return by Kareem Jackson, right? Then the Texans get the ball. They go 3-and-out, and the Broncos put another good drive together, so they go up 21-0. It's the NFL, you know? So, I mean, again, you make one big mistake, it's going to put you behind the eight ball in a big way. They go down, they drive and get a field goal. All right, the Broncos go and get a field goal. Now it's 24-23. The Texans go for it on the fourth down in their own territory because they're down by 3 points, three touchdowns in the second quarter. Fourth down pass, the ball gets tipped at the line of scrimmage. Broncos down go down and score again, and all of a sudden the game's over. It's 31-3. It's over.
Right.
And it was closer than the score, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. But even though that's embarrassing to lose that way at home to the Denver Broncos.
Hey, next 3 weeks, Texans play the Titans two times.
Yeah.
As long as we're talking Titans, they win again.
Yeah.
Double up on the Raiders. Huge second half. They win 42-21. Ryan Tannehill, we'll talk about how he's playing in a moment.
Yeah.
Did you see his hit on the interception?
Oh, what? Like it made our viewing room erupt. Rodney Harrison was like,
can't you relate to being just so pissed off and getting like 30 yards downfield and just laying somebody out?
Yeah, no, I can't. Yeah. I can't. No, I can't totally relate to laying them out. I've just been like, I'm really pissed off. I'm just going to get you to the ground, though. I don't know if I'm going to lay anybody out. But, I mean, he's a phenomenal athlete.
Yeah.
And he, you know, there's a reason he was recruited as a Division I wide receiver to Texas A&M.
And started as a receiver.
And started, exactly right. Yeah. So he is special that way. But, yeah, that is like, as you would know, right? That's going to endear you to the team.
Oh, yeah.
Team's going to love you when you do it. Because, you know, then you go from no longer being a quarterback to they start to look at you as a football player.
Yeah.
And that's when you, like, go up another notch in the locker room.
The team might have had a little bit of crush on him anyway.
Yeah.
But now that they've won six out of seven.
Yeah. Now they got a real crush. You're right. Yeah.
Most dangerous team outside of Baltimore in the AFC right
now?
Ooh,
that's a good question. That's a really good question. Let me see about that. You might be right. They are up there as far as dangerous because they're one of the few teams in the AFC that's really well-rounded. Like, it's a good offense, a good defense. They can beat you with the pass and the run game. They can do a little everything. Yeah, I would say right now they are one of the hottest teams in the AFC and definitely dangerous. Like, I have a different feeling about them this year.
Yeah.
This year I'm actually kind of rooting for them to get in the playoffs. Years past, I've been like, oh, please don't let the Titans get in. Come on.
It's more of an exciting watch now.
It is.
Even when they won recently before this Tannehill-Henry combination, it was like, oh.
Yeah, is this real?
Titans are going to be 8-8 or 9-7.
Right. They're going to just like, geez. No, but now with Tannehill, I think we all go, damn.
And Henry.
They can maybe make a run here in the playoffs to where, you know, you wouldn't be shocked if they won one game or two games because Dean Pease, Vrabel, they're going to coach the defense up. And you're right. Derrick Henry and Tannehill are on fire.
Nice combination.
Yeah.
How about a little damn okay for Joe Hayden?
Damn.
Steelers 23, okay. Cardinals 17.
Yeah. Joe Hayden, you know, gets the two picks. Where do I want to start with this game? You know, the Steelers defense is the story of the game. Again, it's 10-0. And this is just another example of, like, they just need to play clean football on offense and special teams, and they're going to almost be able to beat everybody in football because they have a Super Bowl defense. But they're up 10-0, and Benny Snell fumbles and kind of gets the Arizona jump started to where I believe they got a field goal to make it 10-3, and that kind of gave them momentum, and all of a sudden you look up and you go, it's 10-10. Duck Hodges made a few nice throws again. I look at that. But then their defense just – defense and special teams. I mean, Deontay Johnson has a punt return for a touchdown. Yep. And then defense not only harassed Kyler Murray all day, but, you know, gets an interception in the end zone by T.J. Watt.
I think they have more – they've created more turnovers than any team in the league.
I don't think it's even close right now, you know. So, yeah, to give you some context there, it's 32 turnovers on the defensive side of the ball right now. They have 18 interceptions, 14 interceptions. Or 18 interceptions, 14 fumble recoveries. Mm-hmm. The 49ers are the only other team, I believe, with double-digit and interceptions and fumble recoveries. Oh, no, and the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, right.
So there you go. But, you know, I look at that and go, why? Because there's got a bunch of crazy motherfuckers who hit and they create chaos and they play hard.
Yeah.
And that causes offenses to do dumb things, fumble, careless with the ball because you're getting hit so hard. Quarterback throws it because he's under pressure and all that.
I wonder how sustainable it is. Now we're paring it down to the best team in the AFC.
Right.
And you could run through it. Even though the Patriots have issues, there's reason to be worried about. Can we beat that team?
Yeah.
Tennessee, we just talked about them. Mm-hmm. I just wonder if Pittsburgh can win in January with an offense that's that average.
I know. It's average. They need Juju back. You know, they probably need even a little more than what they're getting from Duck Hodges right now.
Right.
And they need James Conner back. They need to be at full strength. And then maybe they can upset some teams in the playoffs 20-17 or 23-20. But, yeah, it's like right now if Pittsburgh played like New England or Baltimore – I don't know if there's enough offense. I think they lose 20-10 or something like that, where it's a really ugly game and, you know, maybe it's 10-10 in the fourth quarter and then Brady drives them down to get an ugly field goal and then they get one more touchdown at the end of the game because, you know, like I think it would be one of those type of games. They definitely need a little bit more offense going down the stretch.
All right, AFC North, Browns 27, Bengals 19, I should say elsewhere in the AFC North. Headline, Browns win versus Bengals, lose versus drama.
Yeah.
You say what you want about Cleveland. This is team number one.
You're sick of them,
in terms of so tired of this team.
Yeah, right.
Tired of the drama.
Yep.
Tired of the BS.
Right.
So, I mean, go ahead and talk about the Cleveland offense or any of the drama, but I'm tired of these guys.
No, I understand it. I get it. And I think specifically you're talking about Baker Mayfield after the game throwing his training staff under the bus. And
who does that?
Yeah, right. You know, I think, again, he's young. I like his brashness, his honesty a lot of the time. Does he need to measure his words and thoughts a little bit better? Yeah, I mean, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, to me, what he did here, and you tell me if you think I'm wrong. To me, what I think he really did, he overcompensated to try to stick up for Odell Beckham Jr. And within doing that,
which is admirable.
Yes, but you could say it different ways, better ways. You don't need to throw the training staff under the bus to do that.
Have you ever heard of somebody, a starting quarterback, doing that?
No. Now, and again, I think he's very conscious that they haven't got the ball to Odell.
Yeah.
He wants Odell to feel like, hey, you're important to us. So he's trying to kind of make a statement publicly to go like, there's issues there.
I get what you're saying.
You know what I mean?
He's trying to be a good teammate.
But he doesn't have to do that.
Yeah.
And that's where, I get you. And, that's where I think a lot of people are questioning Freddie Kitchens, whether he's got the right approach and handle on this team, these personalities. No, it's debatable.
Yeah.
It's debatable. I'm not so, as the year's gone on, I just go, they might need a little bit more of a old school proven commodity to teach them how to be a little bit more professional, how to deal with certain situations on and off the field, situational football on and off the field, and go from there. And, I like a lot of what Freddie Kitchens can do on the offensive side of the ball. I think it's just some of the overall management stuff of the whole team itself that's maybe been a little bit of a flaw for him this year.
There's so many teams peaking and so many good games going on right now. Like during the week, the officiating and the Browns, to me, are the two topics that come up. I'm like, change the channel.
Yeah, it drives you crazy.
I had enough of both of them.
Yeah, well, the officiating ain't going anywhere.
Also, Rans, getting to the Buccaneers. Hey, Jameis Winston.
Oh.
On your old team here.
Yeah.
The full Jameis experience. Buccaneers 38, Colts 35. Throws for over 400. Four touchdowns with three picks again. It's always an interesting thing to keep your eyes on.
Yeah.
No matter who they're playing.
Yep.
How many wins they have.
Right. His good is great. His good is like as good as anybody you're going to find in football.
Okay, as long as you're talking great.
Yeah.
Little pop quiz here. Who has the most all-time games? 300 passing yards, three touchdowns, and three picks. Hold off on that.
Yeah, don't tell me yet. Don't tell me yet.
It's not your dad.
I know. Okay, I was going to say, he might have a few in his day. You got to go to somebody that throws a lot. I would want to say Dan Marino.
Somebody tell him? Was that off the top of your head?
Man, it was off the top of my head.
Dan Marino did it six times.
Damn, six times.
Yeah.
Dan Bouts
did five.
Oh, well, again, that's why I'm – I mean, again, I just played the numbers there. I mean, Dan Marino in the 80s, it was him dropping back to throw every game.
Right.
And Dan Fouts before that was doing the same thing for the Chargers in the late 70s, early 80s. So, when you're asked to play that style of football, more times than not, you're going to have some games like that. Wow, Eli's got four of them.
I know. George Blanda with a reference there.
Yeah.
Number four.
Man, George Blanda. Look at that. Phillip Rivers is in there. Boomer. Man, Len Dawson went 3-0. That tells you how good his teams were, that he could throw three interceptions and still win and be 3-0. That tells you that the Chiefs are really good.
Smoked half a pack at halftime.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you're right. Chilled out and smoked some Marlboros. Yeah.
Seen those?
I have. It's classic.
Right?
It really is. But, yeah, that's the frustrating thing about Jameis Winston. I mean, all three of the interceptions were bad. The pick six, two to Darius Leonard, another one down the middle to one of the safeties. I can't remember who it was. But, yeah, they were bad. Like, you're going, what the hell? Like, how do you do that? But then some of the throws he made to bring them back and win the football game, you just go, man, I mean, that's top notch. That's cream of the crop type of stuff. And that's what's going to be tough on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the offseason.
How about some special teams?
What about them?
Ready for special teams?
Yeah.
All right. Best 2 weeks for a kicker that involved non-kicking related activities.
Yeah.
Young Hoku.
Yeah, right. He's like a new sensation ever since his Thanksgiving night onside kicks that were the best we've seen so far.
Right.
So that, and then what, he had the fumble recovery yesterday?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Football player.
Yeah, football player. Yeah, not exactly. Not yet, okay? Not yet. But it is funny to see, him recover a fumble, get up, go all crazy, the team be happy for him, laugh, all that. And hey, the Falcons, the Panthers have fallen apart. The Falcons continue to fight. I give them a lot of credit and Dan Quinn credit down there. That was a game there. It's 13-10 in the third quarter. Kyle Allen and the Panthers are kind of moving the ball, and Vic Beasley strip sack fumble sacks him from behind. Falcons go score to make it 20-10, and then it was over. It was like they blew them out of the water from that point on.
Right. How about this one? Have you heard of the double triple club?
Oh, I have. This is a Florio special. This is MDS, Michael David Smith, who writes for Pro Football Talk. He invented this.
All right.
And I'm really into it. I like it. I think it's cool.
The Austin Eckler joins the double triple club.
The double
100
triple.
100 rushing yards, 100 receiving yards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a dynamic threat. I mean, the first thing I really want to say is, like, what the fuck happened to Jacksonville's defense? Okay, yeah. There was a time when they used to actually tackle and stop somebody. But, you know, Eckler is not only the type of guy, you give him a seam in the run game, he can rip off a big run. But as we saw where he got all his passing yards for, where a screen pass, you know, to the right side, it's an all-out blitz for the Jacksonville Jaguars. They dial up the exact right play. He's lined up a receiver outside on the right. Everybody blitzes. Rivers throws it off to him, and he just has to make one guy miss, and he's gone for an 80-something yard touchdown, and that's all there is to it. Hey, the Chargers are going to ruin some people's playoff lives here at the end of the season. You know, they only lose when Phillip Rivers goes to, like, Dumville, USA, and starts to throw interceptions all over the field.
He could very easily, a couple times coming up, go 25 out of 30 for 350 and four touchdowns.
No doubt about it.
Yeah, right.
And I think the other thing, too, is, and I just want to check, I mean, this is the shocking thing that I don't think people realize with the Chargers. Mm-hmm. Their defense is fourth in the NFL. Right.
In total D.
Wow. They're special. Mm-hmm. So the Minnesota Vikings coming to town this week, ooh, they better watch out. They're not walking into the normal, like, 4-8 football team here.
Right.
This is a team, like you said, I mean, Rivers is dangerous. He's got some weapons. They're running the ball decently, and then they play defense. I mean, that's prime upsetville right there.
Jets 22, Dolphins
21. Whoa, holy field goal fest.
Have you ever been as mad as Brian Flores was yesterday after the PI review?
Well, I don't know if I've ever – I don't know. I mean, I've been pretty damn mad, and I can throw some swears out and some – I'm known to have the –
You don't strike me as a guy who could lose it, though.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, well, I am definitely the temperamental one in the Sims family.
Yeah.
That was a tough call for Brian Flores, who's back home. He's from Brooklyn, New York. He wants to win the game, and that's another instance of I just wish it wasn't called.
Right?
I just don't love the call there. And that it's in slow motion, yeah, it's pass interference. In real time, it's bam, bam. It wasn't called for a reason. And now a guy, you know, a few miles down the road at 345 Park Ave is going to decide to jump in
right.
and go, no, I think it was pass interference from where I'm sitting here in my TV room.
Right.
That's my issue with that.
And now we're talking about the refs again.
Yeah.
I liked it better when we're talking about your road.
Oh, don't worry. I've had a lot of incidents over the years. A lot of incidents. Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
I need to stop it, though. I'm 39, like you said. I need to be a father. Yeah, a father and a grown-up.
Yeah. All right.
All right. That's good.
Typical end of the podcast.
Giants, Eagles tonight. You're taking the Eagles.
I actually was going to take the Giants.
Were you?
Yeah.
Then let's go with that $5 bet again.
How many points are you giving me?
Pete Dimolita-Litis.
I need 6.5.
You need 6.5?
Yeah.
Okay.
What's the actual spread?
I was going to say it's probably somewhere around there,
yeah.
But we'll hear it. I mean, 6.5, I'll give you that, right? It's 9.5.
So I'm spotting you a full 3.
Wow, you'll take it a 6.5? I'll give you 7. You want to just make it a 7?
Thank you. Yeah.
We'll make it 7, okay?
Because
since you're being gutsy and going with Eli and the Giants, I would love to see the Giants upset them, but my brain is telling me that that's not going to happen. All right.
All right.
Bet. Oh, I don't know where your hands are in. Let's just do that. All right, everybody. That's it. Paulie, you the man.
Good to see
Thanks
you.
As always. Great seeing you. Everybody out there, have a good week. You know, get at me on social media, at CSimsQB on Twitter, at SimsUnButton on Instagram. And you know what's coming up Wednesday. What the Fuck Happened podcast. Big Phil will be back in the fold. Everybody enjoy the Monday night game. Peace out. Jonathan McDonald says he's out of here. Peace.
He's got some more shows in him.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.